Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts of prior shows are also available there under local programming, Your Financial Choices, and pick the topic that you're most interested in listening to. Welcome to the show. Today is July 10th, 2019. The markets were up with the Dow closing at 26,860, the NASDAQ at 8,202, and the S&P at 2,993. Our topic tonight is second quarter market review, but it's going to be more than that, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number to call in with questions is 610-758-8810, and you can call and talk live with us on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. And again, that number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. I have two returning guests this evening. I have Tim Roof and Connor Darrell. Tim Roof is a CFP professional, financial advisor, and vice president at Valley National Financial Advisors. Tim assists clients with comprehensive financial planning, including retirement planning, investment management, risk management, and tax planning and preparation. He believes that working with individuals and families on long-term planning and navigating financial options requires a relationship based on mutual respect and understanding. He also serves as a member of the Valley National Financial Advisors Investment Committee, providing experienced, in-depth financial analysis to determine appropriate investment opportunities for clients. Connor Darrell is an assistant vice president and head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. Connor leads the firm's investment committee and research efforts. It's Connor's job to provide investment analysis and assist Valley National Financial Advisors advisory teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation. In this role, he meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets. Connor is also a CFA, a chartered financial analyst. Charter holder. You guys, welcome back. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you, Lori. Good evening. Thanks for having us.
So what we're excited to talk about tonight is, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the second quarter market review. But we're going to talk a little bit, too, about once we review this information, types of information that you're paying attention to or that you're hearing about or that you're not paying attention to because maybe you don't understand it. We're going to talk a little bit about what was going on in the markets in the second quarter. And then what do you do with that information? What is it important for you to pay attention to? I didn't really give you guys a chance to introduce yourselves and say hello. I gave you a big intro at the top. Is there anything you want to add before we get started?
Just looking forward to the topic today and hope we can provide some pretty good information for all of you to put to good use.
Okay, because you guys like talking about this, right?
Yeah. Always okay. Fun.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Connor. So tonight, our quarterly recap of the financial markets, and it was another healthy quarter of positive returns for investors. So people seem to get caught up in that. You might not have as many phone calls or questions and things like that when we're seeing positive returns. But can you give us a quick recap of some of the developments that we saw during the second quarter?
Yeah, so returns in stocks and bonds were both positive during the quarter, not quite as strong as they were during the big rally we had in the first quarter, but positive nevertheless. Really, the key areas of focus for the investment universe continues to be, and it's been this way for what feels like going on 2 years now, the Federal Reserve and the ongoing trade saga with China are the two things that are really kind of driving markets right now on a day-to-day basis. There was also during the month of May and June an escalation in tensions between the U.S. and Iran, but the impacts of that were really largely limited to some volatility in prices of oil and rather than any widespread concerns across markets. And that's really the case that with these types of events most of the time, these types of geopolitical scuffles tend to really be short-term in nature and not materially impact the global economy on a large scale. But really, we kind of continue to find ourselves in a market environment where stock and bond prices are both very sensitive to headline risks and kind of rapid changes in sentiment. And it can be really, really distracting at times. But the reality is that while we have had a very strong start to the year, if you take a look at the last 18 months as a whole, the stock market really hasn't gone anywhere. We're about maybe a little bit higher than we were about 18 months ago. So that's really reflective of the fact that, we've talked about this the last few times we've been on the air, is that the global economy has, the momentum in the global economy has weakened a bit, and the outlook for earnings growth now that tax reform is behind us is a little bit less optimistic. But that's really kind of a fact of life for late cycle investing.
Mm-hmm. So it's not pessimistic, it's just less optimistic.
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
I think the way I kind of categorize it, and this is kind of my own observation over the past couple months, is I think the really interesting thing this year, in my opinion anyway, is that while both stocks and bonds have both generated very strong returns, the signals they're sending and the kind of the reasons behind those rallies are kind of very different. And when you look at the bond market, bonds have rallied because interest rates have declined. And you think, okay, why have interest rates declined? And it has to do with what we've talked about, the global economy kind of not looking quite as strong as it was last year, and kind of the outlook for inflation being low. And that's kind of a more of a pessimistic tone, not necessarily all doom and gloom, but certainly not something to jump up and down about. But on the equity side of things, the equity market has rallied. And, when you think about that kind of backdrop we've been talking about where things look a little bit weaker, it doesn't necessarily jive. So a lot of that has, the rally really has had to do with the stock market recognizing that the Federal Reserve or central banks around the world may begin reacting to some of that weakness and provide some stimulus. And the market is clearly optimistic about the potential impacts of that stimulus.
And that brings up a very good point that Connor makes during the second quarter and first quarter of this year, is that we've seen a period where stocks and bonds have gone up together so far to date. And that's historically sometimes unusual because bonds are uncorrelated or do not act like stocks. They tend to perform better when stocks go down or volatile or flat, and bonds tend to perform during those times at a better pace than stocks may, and they provide volatility dampening characteristics within a portfolio. But when you really think about what has caused stocks and bonds to go up is, you look at stocks and the anticipation of the Federal Reserve reducing rates here into the future, and that supports stocks from the standpoint of lower rates for a longer time period, and the ease in policy or the loosening in monetary policy helps drive stock prices in addition to increasing that of bond prices as well.
So some of the terms you guys threw out were, providing stimulus, easing. You said, they promote easing. So this is the stimulus and easing that we're talking about is lowering the interest rates.
Correct. Yeah, that's kind of the general, that's been the policy response for really the past 10 years has been since the financial crisis, central banks around the world have moved interest rates to very low levels. And in some cases in Europe, they even have negative rates. Which is a whole nother kind of road we could go down about what the implications of that might be. But really what the objective is to make lending cheaper. It makes it easier to access capital and makes it easier and cheaper to expand your businesses, hire new people, and kind of that whole, the way that kind of rolls through the economy with more jobs and things like that. So that's kind of the mindset there. And you go back about a year ago, even less than that, maybe 8 months ago, we were talking about the Federal Reserve increasing rates.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it just kind of goes to show how difficult it can be to project some of these things. And as part of the reason that it's talked about so much is because there's been kind of that reversal and the people are very kind of speculative about what the Federal Reserve might do.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back from this first break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Tom Druckenmiller. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 and Sunday from 11 to 1 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters, plus interviews, concert information, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about the second quarter market review. And as we go through the show, we're going to talk a little bit about what you do with this information and why is it, kind of relevant to pay attention to it somewhat. And I have guests with me this evening, Tim Roof, who is a CFP at Valley National Financial Advisors, and Connor Darrell, who is a CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst. We just talked about, Connor, you had referenced like a year ago, we were talking about the Fed increasing interest rates and that impacts people in investing in their fixed income piece, you know, because if interest rates go down, I mean, if interest rates are going up, then it could affect the price of their bonds. I want you to explain that a little bit more, but, you said now what's happened is the Fed is, you know, talking about a rate decrease. It's kind of priced into the market a little bit. People are kind of expecting it based on some of the comments from the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. So some of that's built in. I kind of want to know, what does all of that mean when you're talking to people who have in their portfolio fixed income? Are they getting whipsawed? How do you plan for that? Do you plan for that? Can you give me just a little bit, maybe, Tim, about the kind of the pattern of what we might see and how people react to the news? So one, we thought interest rates were going up. All of a sudden now, you know, they're coming down. What does that mean if someone's looking at their own portfolio?
So up until this year, interest rates were rising. The federal funds was increasing rates for the last 3 to 4 years, and it was driving bond yields up. And when you see yields change, what happens is the principal value of a bond moves inversely of yield. So if yields go up, your bond value or your bond principal goes down. And if yields go down, your bond principal or bond value goes up. So now we've seen here in 2019 so far, yields coming down on the 10-year from closer to 3%, now trending and tracing down to about 2%, and we've seen bond principal or folks that own bonds, their value and their bonds go up because of the yields now have come down so far this year. So
I'm going to jump in here for a second. So if someone has a bond, $10,000 bond, and it's paying 3%, and rates go down, meaning if I wanted to go buy a $10,000 bond now and the rate's 2 point something, that 3% looks pretty good. And right. I might be willing to pay you, Tim, a little bit more to get that 3%.
Right. So that bond is now more valuable in the current market environment, and you would need to require a higher bond principal or purchase price to earn the similar yield moving forward.
Okay. So it's, that's how people can make a little bit of money on their bonds maybe, but inversely, people can lose money if they thought, oh, wow, these rates are great right now. I'm going to get this. And instead, at 2%, and instead the rates have gone up and I'm making this up to 3%. No, did I do that the right way? Well, anyway, okay, it's inverse. So just, I want people to understand. So what happens when, you know, all the indications were interest rates looked like they were going to kind of go up steady, though. Slow over the last couple of two, three years. And now they're going to come down a little bit. We're not talking about big amounts. But what does that mean when you're trying to navigate your investment portfolio?
Well, I think you have to first recall why bonds are in your portfolio. For some, bonds might be there to provide income for your income needs. For other, bonds might be there to reduce risk, dampen volatility during times of stress. So first, always keep that. You know, it's important to keep that in mind, that you understand why the bonds are in your portfolio. So as far as navigating what's to come, it really comes back to, you know, what are the goals you're trying to obtain, and try to keep in mind to spread your allocations appropriately across equity and bonds to help you meet your goals, your time horizon, you know, so on and so forth as you move along.
Okay. So you don't have to be reacting constantly.
Right. And I would also add, if you're a bond investor with the bond piece of your portfolio, you're not trying to hit home runs. You're trying to add something to your portfolio that can help you weather a storm. That's what bonds are there for. And, you know, we talk about what movements in interest rates do to bond prices on a day-to-day basis. But the fact of the matter is, if you own a bond, you buy a 10-year bond, and you're going to hold it for 10 years, you don't care what interest rates do between now and then. You know what you're, unless the bond issuer defaults, you know that you're going to make money. So that's an important kind of consideration, is, you know, bond investors are not, I mean, there are some people out there who are speculating with bonds, but for the most part, you're not trying to do that. That's not the goal.
That's a very good point. Okay, so let's go back to kind of the quarterly report. You had talked at the beginning of the show, Connor, about a weakening global economy. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing in the data? Why is that something that you would pay attention to?
Yeah, so we actually, as our group, and we share some of this with amongst ourselves and with clients as well, just we track a variety of different economic indicators, because, you know, in general, over the long term, the stock market and portfolio success is going to depend upon how healthy the global economy is in the long term. I mean, there can certainly be some divergences over short periods of time, but ultimately that's what's going to drive your portfolio. And, you know, and that's what's driving policy as well, which clearly, as we've seen with how the market's been behaving recently, that's important for just predicting what's going to happen over the short term. So we track a variety of things. You know, some of the things that we think are most important are the consumer, which right now remains very healthy. But there certainly has been a decrease in kind of growth momentum. So back in 2018, we had a period where GDP growth was up around 3%. It has kind of tapered off a bit since then. And globally, we're kind of, in Europe, it's still much slower than that, but still positive. But so we've kind of seen that growth rate kind of slow down a little bit. So the one area where that's been most affected has been business activity. So there's many indexes that track manufacturing activity and things like that. And that has been the most impacted section of the global economy. And a lot of that really has to do with, A, manufacturing tends to be very cyclical, so these kinds of swings can happen. But B, there's also been some relatively profound impacts from the uncertainty stemming from the trade war with China. And it's, you know, companies that are multinational corporations have very complex supply chains. And, you know, if there's now different taxes that are going to be levied on their goods that they're moving from one country to another, or were manufactured in one place and now need to be shipped elsewhere, it's very complicated for them to make new investments in plants and equipment to expand their business, because they're not sure what their cost structure is going to look like moving forward. So we've seen a slowdown kind of the investments that those companies are making, because they just don't know what kind of tax environment they're going to be faced with.
And that had, you know, building on that, that had to do with the growth we saw in 2018 and even 2017, as we saw businesses spending capital to invest for the future. And until some of the trade uncertainty arose, within the last year or so, companies have kind of held off or curbed their enthusiasm towards capital spending for the time being until there is a more sound certainty surrounding what trade policy looks like moving forward, so they can make long-term business investment decisions.
Okay. I want to come back to that when we come back from the break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or off air if you're not comfortable talking live. You can give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in. And again, the number is 610-758-8810. And I have in the studio with me this evening Tim Roof, CFP, and Connor Darrell, CFA. And we're talking about the kind of an overview of the second quarter kind of market activity and some of the implications of what we've seen kind of really even over the last 18 months. Tim, we just talked about that, and Connor, that we had seen an uptick in investing. Companies seem to be, putting money back into maybe the manufacturing or the building and investing in, you know, people, whatever it might be, because there had been a lot of cash on the books for corporations. We see them investing, and all of a sudden now there's a little bit of a pullback. We've seen a little bit of a, in the manufacturing numbers, a little bit of a pullback, you think, because of a fear of, like, the trade disputes that are going on. They're a little bit of uncertainty, so they don't necessarily want to move forward. Is there still a lot of cash, though, on the sideline? Have they tapped out? I mean, are there any statistics or data on that? Do companies still have cash in the balance sheet to spend, or is it that they're nervous, or that they've already invested the cash?
I think that there's a lot of companies that do still have a lot of cash, and that's the kind of par for the course, especially with some of the large giant companies that are traded on the stock exchange that you might be talking about. But I think what we've seen is, after tax reform, kind of part of the goal of some of the adjustments they made to the corporate tax code was to bring back a lot of cash that certain companies were holding in banks overseas, because they didn't want to have it on their books and get taxed. At the time, the United States had the largest corporate tax rate in the world, so they were kind of trying to avoid that a little bit. And the goal was to kind of have them bring some of that money back and begin really reinvesting. And they did do that to an extent. But we saw a lot of those companies began buying back shares. They began, maybe increasing their dividend payments, which is great for investors. But I think it kind of speaks to some of the uncertainty that's out there when a company is making the decision to kick back cash to shareholders as opposed to investing in their business. Because when you think about how these businesses function, they have these very large teams of people where their job is really to go out and identify, what kinds of investments can we make. A lot of times there's some kind of hurdle rate in their minds where they think to themselves, okay, if we can't make more than X amount of dollars over the next 10 years, then we're not going to invest in this project. When you now introduce the uncertainty related to that we were talking about before the break related to all the kind of trade and taxation, that there's just, they don't know how much things are going to cost. There's not as much certainty there. It makes it harder for them to make those projections, and it makes it kind of in some ways increases that hurdle rate. So they have to be really, really confident about a project in order to invest. So I think we've seen as a result of some of that uncertainty, they've chosen to deploy that cash in other ways.
And moving forward, I think conventional wisdom would say once trade is resolved, we would see corporations go back being more confident and comfortable with spending some of the capital that they have raised over the last couple of years now. And that should help hopefully be a boost to growth, alternatively due to the fact that once we see some capital spending pick up in the future following a trade resolution.
Okay, so could we see that in the second half? What's the runway for this? Do any idea
for the trade discussions?
Well, for the feeling confident, if they come to some resolution with the trade, discussions with China in particular, if they come to some kind of agreement there, are we talking we're going to see investment 2 months, 6 months? Because we seem to keep revisiting the same conversation.
I would expect in behind closed doors, companies, those teams that Connor talked about, and the executive management teams, they've already have a list of things that they would like to do, but are probably holding off of that until they have an idea of what the impacts of tariffs or future tariffs could have on those decisions. So I think once we have some finalization with the trade policies, I think corporations will probably be pretty quick to act.
So we've been talking domestic. What about worldwide? What are we seeing there? I mean, do you have that information for the manufacturing?
The numbers we track are global. I think we've seen it across the world, but certainly I think Europe has been impacted. Europe has slower growth than the United States does. That's really where the weakest global economy is in Europe. And they're talking about the European Central Bank, which is their version of the Federal Reserve, is now talking about, stimulating the economy again. And, they're already at rates that are very low, and that could be problematic for them if they enter into another recession where they won't really have the ability to lower rates if they're already at zero. So that's an area that's a little bit tricky. But overall, I think when we look at all the global data around the world, we our general conclusion has been that, things certainly do not look as great as they did, a year, 2 years ago. But in absolute terms, the numbers still look pretty good.
Yeah, and it's really, we're looking at what the data is suggesting is retracement towards the long-term average growth rate of about 2% here in the U.S. So we trended towards 3% in 2018, and we're pulling back to that 2.5% growth rate moving forward as we move along, which, is very sustainable in this economic environment.
Okay. I wanted to also, before we have our break, because I do want to come back to and talk a little bit about, when people talk about recession, so that we'll do that after the half. But when we were talking about global and Europe, what about Brexit? Every year, every day on my phone, I get an alert, something, with Brexit. It's been going on for, 2 years now or something. Is that impacting anything in Europe? Really?
I think the Brexit situation is creating an uncertainty that you could kind of compare in some ways impacting the market in the same way as the trade war, because you have companies that might operate all over Europe and now they're unsure of exactly what kind of deal might be struck between Great Britain and the rest of Europe and how their business might be impacted. So I think you've seen kind of very similar kind of slowdown in them. Maybe they have projects they want to invest in, or they have ideas they want to kind of implement across their businesses that they're kind of holding off on because they don't really know what the deal might look like. And it has continued to drag on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you make it harder to freely move money across borders, it does obviously have an impact on growth. And, we've seen possible expectations of a brewing recession in the United Kingdom, at this point of time. So it's something that has hampered the European area certainly this year from a growth perspective. And, you know, when we look at the economies, we would say U.S. is, you know, on the, you know, one of the more solid grounds. There's pockets of emerging areas where we're seeing growth. But Europe is definitely one of the areas where they're willing, it looks like the ECB is willing to continue to have to try to stimulate the economy in some ways to keep things going.
Okay. All right, folks. So we're at the halfway point. We are talking with Tim Roof and Connor Darrell about the second quarter market review. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You have been listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY 88.1 Allentown. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 89. Tonight, it's going to be low around 70. Thursday, partly sunny with a slight chance of showers. It may produce heavy rain, high near 84. Thursday night, low around 71. Friday, partly sunny with a high near 87. Friday night, mostly clear with a low around 67. And for your Saturday, sunny with a high near 87. Saturday night is going to be low around 69. And for Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 88. This is WDIY 88.1. Now back to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. I have with me Tim Roof and Connor Darrell. We're talking about the second quarter market review. And I just want to kind of pull back for a second. First, I want to mention the phone number again for people who, you know, have questions. You can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Why I want to pull back is, you know, as we're talking, you know, for listeners who are staying tuned for the whole hour, we're talking and touching on a number of different aspects of the market. We've talked about, you know, bonds, equities, interest rates, growth rates, manufacturing, data, all, you know, different aspects, you know, what's happening in Europe, Brexit. The reason we kind of have to look at all of these because they kind of work in conjunction when we're talking about the market. When we're talking about people who are investing, they're investing quite often in 401ks, retirement plans. Some people have IRAs. And if you're in a diversified portfolio, you may have exposure to some of the global market, you know, areas that we've been talking about. You have some exposure to fixed income. You have some exposure to equities. So kind of having a little bit of awareness of what's happening in the economy is good, not necessarily for you to react to, but to be aware of so that you can be more informed in your own decision making. Again, we're not trying to get people to react to, you know, little tidbits that are happening. And Connor mentioned that right at the beginning, I think, of the show when we were first talking about the trade disputes and the little kerfuffle they had with Iran. You know, those things kind of pass. They come, they go. And if you kind of try to keep that in perspective, you'll understand in the end how you're working in your own portfolio. It doesn't have to react all the time. So I'm not explaining that very well, but I want people to understand all these little pieces we're talking about. You don't actually have to understand each little individual one, but in the composite of it, it could be important and understand how you move forward with your own portfolio.
Yeah, and I'll even add, I think that having an understanding of kind of what's going on and understanding kind of some of the implications for a portfolio can help you, having that education can help you avoid making an emotional decision. And we were talking earlier today, Lori, about, you know, in general, if you have a properly diversified portfolio, there's probably going to be a piece in the portfolio at all times that's not really working right. That's what diversification is. If everything's moving in the same direction all the time, then you're not diversified. And that's what you kind of want, because if you have some piece that's not working right now, if there's a crisis that happens, that piece may be the piece that's holding up well. So that's kind of, I think, important to kind of keep in mind. And it's been really, really hard over the past decade or so to maintain diversification and be disciplined, because the way that markets have behaved, it's really been, you've been in a situation where anything you did to diversify away from the S&P 500 or U.S. stocks has impacted your performance negatively. And if you go back and look at historically decades and decades of market history, that's very rare. So it's been a really difficult environment. It's really tried a lot of investors' patience, because it's been so easy to just put it in the S&P 500 or put it in U.S. stocks and kind of forget about it, because that's what's worked over the past 10 years. But that's not necessarily what's going to work over the next 10, 20, 30 years, et cetera.
Okay, that's a good point.
Yeah. So as Connor said, it's just so important to keep that discipline, because although, as Connor mentioned, over the last 10 years, the S&P 500 has outperformed most other foreign markets, you're still, if you're diversified appropriately, you're still receiving, you know, returns that would help you meet your long-term goals by being diversified. And by, you know, making a emotional or major adjustment now at this point, following such a long secular period where we've had the U.S. outperform other markets, you know, you could be getting whipsawed on that. And so, you know, from understanding the information that's going on in the economy, it helps you understand the expectations that you should, receive from your investment portfolio long term.
Yeah, that's a great point. It helps you understand what it makes sure that your expectations are realistic. And if your expectations are realistic, then you're less likely to react if your expectations aren't met.
Right. Because if you are reacting to the daily information and the daily noise that comes out in the news, you likely aren't allocated appropriately for your investment goals and your risk tolerance. You might be either taking on too much risk, and then you're reacting to the news and again, look back historically, you know, even corrections are when the market drops 10% or more, and corrections last normally 3 to 6 months, and they recover within 3 to 6 months. So think about how hard it is to time a correction, because by the time you sell, the market's lower. Mm-hmm. And by the time you're buying back in, the market's likely higher. So it's taking you longer to recover. Mm-hmm. So in order to avoid that, it's important to have the appropriate diversification within your portfolio between stocks and bonds, you know, to manage your emotions so you don't have to get consumed by the information that comes out daily in the news.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we can't time it. In fact, we were talking a little bit, I think Tim and I were talking about this at one point too, about how when people are looking at the yield curve and it inverts, and then they think that's a sign of a recession coming, and we've seen it touch that, like probably what, a couple times in the past X number of months?
Yeah, and it's still in some ways kind of shaped like that. So we're still kind of in, it's sending that signal that you're referring to.
So, but we could have said that for more months than what people would have expected the recession to come, right? I mean, because they'll say, oh, you know, you never can tell. Is it going to come in 2 months? Is it going to come in 6 months? Could it be 18 months? And so when we look at it predicting a recession, if you could talk for a minute what that means, because people who lived through 2008 might have one thought about what it is, but if you look over history, it could tell us a different story.
So with the yield curve, historically, the yield curve has been a pretty good predecessor or indicator of a recession coming on the horizon. However, at this point in time, where the yield curve inversion, it's on the very short end of the curve. Many times when we look at the indicator for recession, we look at the 2-year treasury and the 10-year treasury, which is yet to invert at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Or so, even the 30.
Correct. So when we look at that, those indicators aren't blinking red at this point of time. Yes, those spreads have tightened some, but yet not to the point where, you know, where that indicator would start to blink.
Mm-hmm. We do have a caller on line one. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg. Carolyn, hi. Can you hear us?
Hi. Yes, hi. I can. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great.
Great.
Good to talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
And I've been listening to this. It's been very interesting. And you're really looking at the big picture, the, you know, the big economy, global, what's going on in all parts of the world. I wonder if you could just speak a little bit, please, to a little more of a local, the Lehigh Valley economy. It seems to me to be good, housing, jobs. I know there's a lot of downtown revitalization going on in Bethlehem and Easton, but if you know, I'm sure you're more in touch with it than I am. So if you could just speak a little bit to that, I think that would be great.
Do you want to stay on the phone, Carolyn, or do you want us to let you go?
I'll stay on
okay.
the phone.
Go ahead.
So when I drive around the Lehigh Valley, you know, and I see the parking lots to the retail stores and everything else, I see them full. And when I go in the stores, there's a lot of people walking around the stores, a lot of people shopping.
And at restaurants.
And we're seeing more residential, either multifamily residential units go up here in the Lehigh Valley. So that's saying that, you know, that there's jobs here in the Lehigh Valley. There's growth here in the Lehigh Valley. And you know, Bethlehem and Easton and Allentown have done a great job of trying to stimulate growth within their cities, and I would say the Lehigh Valley, you know, is on solid footing at this time.
And I would agree. I'd even add that I don't know the data off the top of my head, but I saw a report recently that discussed how the Lehigh Valley is one of the fastest growing regions in the Northeast, and you see that when you jump on 22 on a weekday and you can't go anywhere. That's because people keep moving here, which is great. And I think that's because we have such a healthy job market. We have really revitalized a lot of the local areas, and I think the Lehigh Valley is in great shape.
And we're, you know, it's centralized to Philadelphia and some of the other, you know, other cities nearby. So, and it's not the same price to live here. So we're finding, you know, folks moving to the area because of that.
It's interesting, Carolyn, because I actually interviewed Don Cunningham, who's the CEO of Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation.
I heard that. That was wonderful.
He was wonderful, and mm-hmm. he was great to meet. And all the accomplishments that he has had as, you know, the mayor of Bethlehem and the Lehigh County, I think it was controller, and now in his role trying to bring, you know, manufacturing and business into the area, but also having the three cities, Allentown, Easton, and Bethlehem, work together in that effort. Mm-hmm. I think that makes a big difference. But it was really interesting because he said to me when he was, I think it was when he was mayor, he said he realized you have to get things done and you have to show that you get things done. And of course, he's from the local community. And so he was very passionate about making sure, you know, that they were working toward all these goals that they had for Bethlehem and revitalizing Bethlehem and then onto the county and now the Tri-City area. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting because he had said at this level, you have to show that you get done. But sometimes at the higher governmental levels, like even at the federal level, it seems to be a different conversation. So if our, you know, if our federal government and our global governments could kind of work like our little local governments and make it, you know, action oriented and helping the community and everybody kind of working together, it would be very interesting to see what difference that would make instead of politicizing, you know, all of the decision making. So
I absolutely agree on the local level to have a coordinated approach to your development plans.
Yeah.
And I would also like to add, and I remember him saying that you also have to preserve your greenways and your open spaces. And not, you know, develop everything. People need their parks and rec and their clean streams. And, you know, that's very important, too. And I was very pleased to hear that that was important to him as well.
Well, and I think that is another attraction to our Lehigh Valley is that we do have a wonderful park system and lots of art attractions with, ArtsQuest and the Banana Factory and all of that as well.
Right.
And areas like Easton that have revitalized, and then
Iron
Pigs.
The Nurture Center down there is wonderful.
Yeah, so it is good for the people who are living here that, gainfully employed and, their real estate appreciates and houses are selling quite fast. So that's something good to point out as well. So
thank you,
Carolyn, for calling
and
in.
Yes, and on that, as a parting note, I'd like to say how important it is to buy local as well.
Exactly. I'm with you on that.
Great.
Okay, thanks, Carolyn. Take care.
You.
Okay, bye-bye. Folks, we'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails. Discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I'm your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening Tim Roof and Connor Darrell. We're discussing the second quarter market review. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So, Connor, we're going to kind of move on here. So, the market has seemed to move kind of contrary to some of the news that's coming out about the economy. So last year we had a 20% earnings growth, 3% GDP growth, and the markets, especially in the last quarter of 2018, they really struggled. This year the economy feels a little bit weaker. You've said, growth isn't what it was. It's kind of, slowing down. Earnings are much lower, earnings growth is much lower, yet the market seems to have taken off, at least in, the recent months. How can we as investors make sense of that kind of activity?
Yeah, so I think the important thing to remember is that markets, as they function, they're inherently forward-looking. So they're always trying to anticipate what growth or earnings might be in the future, not necessarily what they are at this exact point in time. So I think a perfect example of that is if you kind of go back to 2009, obviously we were in the midst of the worst economic recession since the Depression. The unemployment rate was up around 10%, and people were really hurting, but the market that year was up 26%. And if you cut off the first like 2 or 3 months of that year, it was up a lot more than that. And that's really a product of the fact that the market was kind of appreciating the fact that the worst might be over and that the future opportunities looked a lot better than what they were at that exact point in time. So I think it appears that at least as of right now, the market is anticipating that things will improve. And I think that's part of that is the anticipation, as we talked about earlier, where it really does seem like both the bond market and stock market are expecting that the Federal Reserve will reduce interest rates to some extent, maybe once this summer and one more time before the end of the year. So I think that that's a big part of it. But I think the flip side of that coin might be that some people might use the term that the market might be priced to perfection. You hear that term a lot, meaning that all the potential good things are really baked into the current prices and all the potential bad outcomes are not really being considered. If that's the case, then the second half of the year could be volatile, but I think it's important to kind of make the distinction that, volatile doesn't necessarily mean that returns are going to be terrible. Volatility is a part of investing, and it's just going to, I think there's a lot of uncertainty right now, and I think, kind of where we were in December, we're obviously a lot higher now, and I think it's just kind of an opportunity to kind of take a breath.
Yeah, volatility could basically mean on a day-to-day basis that the market movements are greater, in value than normal, So when you think about volatility, it's not that we're saying, you know, the market would go down. It just means on a day-to-day basis, the markets could fluctuate more rapidly, but still move up over time.
Well, that is one thing we've seen, though, in the past several months, is we've seen it go up like a lot one day and down by the end of the day, or up the next day, down the next day. So we really, it's almost a lesson in sticking to a discipline.
Precisely. That's why it's important, again, to have a discipline, stay the course with that discipline over time. Because, again, if you're trying to react, you know, you put yourself in the position of possibly, you know, falling behind of your goals when you're reacting to everything that comes out on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Connor, I want to go back to, you know, earlier I said something about what's the runway, and what I'm a creative person, not really, you know, kind of the numbers guys that you are. I'm like a creative, and I see this runway, like, how do you know what's going to happen? And you kind of alluded to that when you said some of this is baked in to the market already. So the runway is, some of this is baked in. We see that there could be some optimism about the second half of the year. Where is that optimism coming from? Well, people could look at, you know, the Fed reducing rates could lead to some of that optimism. Some trade deals could lead to that optimism. And then is that what leads to, you know, the reinvestment of corporations into the manufacturing, into the jobs, and all of that? And that's what's baked in.
Yeah, I think the way I would describe it is I think that there's a cloud of kind of uncertainty over the market, but the market has kind of began to appreciate the fact that that cloud might be lifted and is now kind of acting in a way that, you know, kind of in some ways ignores some of those uncertainties. And I think that that's some of the activity we've seen. I would add, on a personal level, I think too much focus is placed on the Federal Reserve. And I think part of it is just a product of the news cycle, and that it happens to be one of the more interesting things going on right now. And it's one of the more directly translatable things that the market is clearly going to be impacted by. But I think investors should kind of, it would be important to make note of the fact that over the long term, a 25 basis point, which would be 0.25%, or 50 basis point, 0.5% move in short-term interest rates that the Fed might implement is not going to have a profound impact on your financial future. It's really more of a speculative kind of discussion point for people on television and for us on the radio to kind of talk about and kind of make projections about. I mean, it's important. The Federal Reserve plays a really important role in the economy. But it's not going to, I think it, to kind of simplify things to the point where we're saying that if the market, you know, if we get a 25 basis point rate cut, that the market's going to soar is a little bit unrealistic.
Yeah, we were discussing this earlier. You know, the difference between a federal funds rate of 2.25% or 2% is more or less psychological in nature. You know, it doesn't, like Connor said, have a major impact on borrowing and lending. So, you know, the economy is still going to, you know, move along as it was previous to the Fed cutting the rate by 0.25%.
Yeah, which is why, kind of in the back of my mind, in some ways, when I look at kind of how the market has behaved and how it's reacted to some of the news regarding the Federal Reserve, I think that there does seem to be a confidence that the market has that if the Fed moves, that, you know, this will generate some meaningful stimulus. And you know, that may turn out not to be the case. We may remain in this kind of slow growth environment, which isn't the worst thing in the world. 2%, we were talking earlier, Tim, 2% growth and low inflation is a pretty benign environment, and one that is fully conducive to achieving reasonable investment returns and reaching, you know, long-term goals. So I think, but I just want to caution that, you know, if we're expecting this big jump from a 50 basis point rate cut, we're not going to, I don't think we're going to really get that. It just, to me, does not necessarily seem like it should be the core area of focus. For me, to use your runway analogy, I would be more focused on, did I properly assemble a well-constructed plane? you know, am I going to be able to take off from the runway? And that's your portfolio.
I love that.
So, that's great.
So I think that's what the focus should be on. You know, have I properly constructed a portfolio, and not necessarily, you know, what does the runway look like? Because you can't control the runway.
Yeah, I love that. Hey, now I've got to run with this. So with this airplane, we got fuel that really, you know, engines that really like give us the boost. But we also have the safety features, right? The mask that drop down, the cushions, the flotation devices underneath. So let's talk about a properly diversified portfolio and doing your homework on that a little bit.
Right. So the engine's going to be probably your growth assets. If we're going to go with this analogy, the engine would be your growth assets that's going to provide a return, you know, historically over time, that's going to outpace that of inflation and help you, you know, meet your long-term investment and savings goals. And then, you know, as you say, the oxygen mask that comes down and so forth, and the flotation device, that would be your cash and bonds within your portfolio. They're there to help you provide income as well as a ballast, you know, when the market becomes volatile or we go through a period of a recession.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just important to have the appropriate allocation to, you know, the equities and the appropriate allocation to the bonds in your portfolio based upon your risk tolerance, your time horizon, and other factors, cash needs. So you have to keep these things in mind when constructing that appropriate airplane for you to take off from that runway.
Mm-hmm. Right, because there's all different sections in the airplane. You can have first class, business class, the coach. So all different sections. It could look very different, but it's still a seat.
That's right.
We still have a couple minutes. Any kind of overarching thoughts that you'd like to share?
I don't know. I think one thing that's been interesting, we were talking about this earlier, Tim, really a phenomenon in the market that's been kind of in place for a number of years now is kind of the contrasting difference between value and growth investing. How, you know, value, if you think about kind of conceptually, there's different philosophies to how to pick stocks. And for whatever reason, the growth philosophy has outperformed the value philosophy.
Can you explain the difference?
So value would be you're trying to find stocks that are trading at prices that are cheap relative to where they've traded in the past. Maybe they're generating a very common ratio would be to look at the price of the stock relative to how much earnings it's producing. So if it has a low price relative to high earnings, that would be something that you'd consider it to be cheap because you're paying less money for every dollar of earnings that the company is making. Where growth stocks are more, you're looking at companies that have very high revenue growth rates. Maybe they're in an industry like a high technology industry that is generating very high growth rates, but they might not be profitable yet.
And growth companies tend to be reinvesting their earnings back into the company to continue to support their earnings and grow their earnings into the future. Value companies may tend to look towards repaying their shareholders, their owners, with dividends and buybacks of shares, mm-hmm. and even using some funds to maybe acquire or merge with other companies to, you know, protect their landscape and their revenue streams moving forward.
So with just a minute left, you wanted to bring up the value versus growth?
Yeah, so it's been one of the phenomenons in equity investing over the past several years, and even going back probably past even the financial crisis, has been that value stocks have underperformed relative to growth stocks. And kind of we talked about what the differences between those are. But historically, and there's been a lot of work done on this from, you know, Nobel Prize winning economists, that actually concluded that over the long term, value stocks tend to provide equal or better returns to other stocks in the market. So I think it's something that's interesting to watch in the markets. Has there been a shift in the way that investors are behaving, or and people are questioning as whether is this something that's going to flip at some point. So I mean, we can probably save that topic. It's something we can get into really deeply next time. But I just think it's an interesting phenomenon.
Okay. Lots of layers. There's lots of layers and lots of moving parts. Tim and Connor, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights and information. I really appreciate it because I certainly cannot speak to it the way you guys do. If people want to reach you, how do they reach you? What's your number?
Sure. Our office number is 610-868-9000, and then you can just either ask for Connor or Tim.
Okay. Thank you so much again for being here. Next week, I am going to talk with Rod Young and Lori Young about the passing of a spouse. What do you need to know about? What impacts you? Pension selection, Social Security, cash flow, and also dealing with the emotional impact of that and moving forward. So I look forward to having them. Thank you, Connor and Tim. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, callers. I appreciate it, and listeners. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.